Good morning, Cowboys Nation. Welcome to another episode of The Writer's Block. I am your host, David Howman, and we're changing things up a bit this week. My normal co-host, Chris Holling, Brandon Clemens, they can't be here. They're also enjoying their bye week, just like the Cowboys did. So we called in an audible. We brought back the OG, the OG Writer's Block host, Mr. Brandon Lurie, known on Twitter at Brandon is right. That's W-R-I-T-E. Brandon Lurie is back with us on the Writer's Block here. Brandon, welcome back. How are you doing? How does it feel to be back here at the show that you helped create from the old days back in Blog and the Boys history?
Yeah, you guys have taken the show and run it with stride. You know, the scene from Avengers Infinity War where Captain America comes out of the shadows, you know, a little more grizzled with the beard, a little more like darker, you know, a little more aged and just like more of a, you know what, I think that's sort of the appeal of what I'm going for right now. Maybe people can't see. I've grown a little bit more facial hair. So I think me and Captain America, we share that sort of kinship. But no, it feels good to be back in the old threads, and I'm happy to talk about the Cowboys. And finally, after the bye week, it's sort of like we could put whatever stink from the regular season behind us and hopefully look to a brighter future. But I don't know about that just yet.
Yeah, it's we're treading some not uncharted waters, but definitely uncertain waters right now. You know, for all of our listeners, they've been hearing week in, week out as the season has unfolded. My reactions to each game and kind of the highs and the lows, more lows it feels like than highs right now. But I don't think we've heard yet. How are you feeling about the Cowboys right now? Are you like, because they're 3-3. I mean, record wise, they're right in the middle. Yeah. You know, it's the sky is not falling, but it certainly feels that way around some parts of Cowboys Nation. Whereas there's some others that are like, hey, you know, guys got to get healthy and things are going to get better, even though they play the 49ers this week. But where are you feeling? Where's your morale right now with this team?
Yeah, I will say like a lot of it is very reminiscent of 2020. Like, and I'm usually glass half full, but like this season, I think I've really taken a step back and just looking at it from a like sort of bird's eye view. I think if you take the mask off, you know, again, as we get closer to Halloween, if you take the mask off, like in Scooby-Doo, of believing that this is sort of an all-in season, like Super Bowl or bust, and you look at it more as the Cowboys are in a soft rebuild. They are trying to get their young up-and-coming players a ton of experience. They are going to be relying on Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons for the foreseeable future and phase out a lot of veterans after this year, potentially like a Zach Martin, like a DeMarcus Lawrence. I think it becomes a little bit more palatable where you could say, listen, whatever we can get from this year and kind of carry it forward next year, that would be great. But the only caveat and the problem with that is that Mike McCarthy is in the final year of his contract, and it doesn't really add up to where the Cowboys are right now. So it's sort of like there's a lot of different mixed messaging going on, and I think that looks exactly like a 500 record, like a 3-3 team where they want to be competitive, and we've seen them play really well, like against the Cleveland Browns. But then when you look at what Cleveland's turned into, it doesn't really look as glowing of a victory. And then you see that they still can't get over the hump of playing some of the best teams in the NFL, like the Baltimore Ravens, like the Detroit Lions. And you hope that it's at least a competitive matchup with those teams, but they were just blowouts. They were laughers of a game. And so I think, like I said, if you look at it from a standpoint of the team is just in a soft rebuild, I think it becomes a little bit more easier to swallow. But unfortunately, that's not what fans were promised entering the year. That's not what they were sold. Mike McCarthy, in his press conference after it was announced he was coming back as the head coach of the Cowboys, he said, I think it was Jane Slater asked Mike McCarthy, you know, what are you trying to sell the Cowboys on, you coming back? And he said, well, just buy into us. Well, that stock is pretty low right now. And I think nobody's getting their return on investment on that one. So I would say it could be better. It could be worse. And that's pretty much where we're at right now.
Yeah. Well, I would say when the stock is low, you got to buy the dip. So
yeah, exactly. For people who aren't financially savvy, they have no idea what you're talking about. But for those who are, maybe they just want to take, you know, a little awareness of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I agree with everything you said. I think Jerry made some sort of comment on one of the radio shows a couple of weeks ago before he threatened to fire radio hosts and everything, where he didn't outright say it, but he kind of hinted at like, well, this is kind of a soft rebuild,
right?
To your point of what you were saying, which again, like, that's fine. I can understand that. Kind of similar to what the Buffalo Bills did this offseason. I mean, they jettisoned off several veteran players, including Stephon Diggs. They said, you know, we're gonna kind of go through a bit of a youth movement. We're still building around Josh Allen, but you know, they had a couple of seasons where it was like, okay, this is the year, Super Bowl or bust for Buffalo. And they didn't do it because, you know, if you're in the AFC, you're competing for the opportunity to lose to the Chiefs in the AFC championship game.
Yeah.
And I've said before on here, if you're in the NFC, you're competing for the opportunity to lose to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's a losing proposition one way or the other in my mind. But at least for the Bills, they were like, okay, we're still going to be competitive. They still play in a division that, as we've seen, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
No.
Jets have an interim head coach. The Dolphins are expected to get Tua Tagovailoa back this week, but have not looked good at all with him gone. And then there's the Patriots, and they're playing, they're trying, they're doing their thing. Their coach is calling players soft in the media, so that's, things are going great there. But I think the Cowboys, it makes sense for them to take a similar approach, except for what you said. Their coach could very well be gone after this year. If you're going into it with that mindset of a soft rebuild, you extend the coach, because that's not fair to the coach to say, hey, you know, this is a transition year, but also like, we're probably going to transition away from you after the transition year. Cause then you've got all these new guys coming in that you've gotten some snaps with this year and gotten, you know, developed them up, gotten Marshawn Nealand ready to replace DeMarcus Lawrence, figured out a replacement potentially for Zach Martin. And then you're going to change all the schemes with a new coach. It just doesn't make sense. So that's really been my biggest issue since the Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb deals got done, because that was frustrating on its own with how slow that was. And I said at one point in the offseason, shortly after they decided we're going to bring McCarthy back, but we're not going to extend his deal, it reminded me of Jim Harbaugh's last year with the 49ers, where there was all this talk about, like, the owner just didn't, you know, not the owner, the GM, Trent Baalke, who's now, you know, ripping the Jacksonville Jaguars down to the ground as well. He didn't get along with Jim Harbaugh. There was internal strife there, and everyone kind of went into that last year in 2014 of feeling like there's a very real chance Jim Harbaugh gets fired after this year, even though he's done nothing but win. And then they went 8-8. He didn't officially get fired, but he got fired. We know what happened there. And here the Cowboys are in kind of a similar situation right now. They're 3-3. We know they won't go 8-8. That's impossible these days with an odd number of games being played. But,
well, listen, you could still go 8-8-1. You know,
you could go 8-8-1, which would be different.
That
for tiebreaker reasons.
It's funny because, like you were just talking about, like, the schedule will force the hand one way or the other. I've been kind of toying with the fact where it's like, if you are dealing with all these injuries like Dallas is, where you're losing your arguably best player in Micah Parsons for an extended period of time, you're losing DeMarcus Lawrence, you're losing Deron Bland to start the year, and you're starting to lose a lot of key pieces, where, I mean, do you say at the end of the year, like, Mike McCarthy wasn't dealt a fair hand? And I mean, a lot of that has to do with Jerry Jones not extending them. Like, I mean, he was climbing up a hill to begin with to start the year. But do you look at the evaluation of him in his final year and say, like, we couldn't really get a good grasp on Mike McCarthy, so we want to bring him back for another year in 2025. But does Mike McCarthy want to do that for his sake and his familial sake? I'm sure this is really stressful for him. He's done a really good job of not showing it. He's been in situations like this before. He's referenced that in his press conferences where he's been in a situation like this. Of course, the spotlight is always brighter on Dallas, so I argue that it's probably not been a similar situation like this. But I mean, I think for him, does he even want to come back if they offer him sort of a one-year deal? To me, it would have to be at least a two-year deal. But to your point, you know, he's trying to develop a lot of these guys. And when you look at the snap count for a lot of these players, like, I think that they're also missing a big chunk of their sort of veteran presence that they had at the middle parts of their roster, you know, maybe like from player 30 to 50. I put a tweet out earlier today, and I talked about this on the radio last week on 105.3 The Fan. Like, when you look at the Cowboys team, like, when you lose someone like a Tyron Smith, a Tyler Biadasz, Dorrance Armstrong, Tony Pollard, and replace them with guys like a Tyler Guyton, Rico Dowdle, Cooper Beebe, and someone like a Marshawn Nealon, and even a Chauncey Golston, like there's a huge significant drop off in just game production, or just snaps in general. Like, you might think that these guys are maybe slightly above average players in the NFL, but they've seen a lot. Like, they've been around for a long time. Tyler Biadasz has been in the same system for 4 years since he got drafted by Mike McCarthy. So regardless of if you feel like he's a not the greatest center in the world, like, he's seen a lot. And maybe those veteran players make it a little bit more competitive against the teams like the Ravens, the Lions. Maybe the Cowboys still lose those games, but it might look a little bit better. You know, and you look at the Commanders, I mean, they took a lot of those Cowboys depth players and turned them into sort of like the same thing, like transition players like they were in Dallas. But just Dan Quinn saw that value in having those guys in the locker room. And when you lose them in free agency, I think that kind of hurt the Cowboys more than what they were expecting, more than what fans were expecting. The Cowboys are playing almost their entire rookie class outside of Nate Thomas because he ended up on IR. And then you also have Justin Rogers, who's no longer on the team. So when you take those two guys out of the equation, everybody in the Cowboys draft class this year has taken meaningful snaps. And it just hasn't worked out to the glowing review of what we usually expect, but that's okay. You know, I think the expectation has always been high for Will McClay, but they just need time. And unfortunately, that's great for the long term of the Cowboys, but the short term for Mike McCarthy doesn't look as pretty.
Yeah. And to your point about would he even want to come back? And speaking of Jim Harbaugh, this offseason, Mike McCarthy hired Don Yee as his agent, who also represents Jim Harbaugh, got him a very large deal with Michigan when he left the 49ers, and then now with the Chargers, is very much known as like a coaching super agent. And so it definitely feels like McCarthy was kind of like, oh, okay, you don't want to extend me now? Okay, well, I'll bet on myself. And when I go and have another good year and you come back and say, let's work out a deal, I'm going to have a guy that's going to haggle you. Because he's seen what Jerry does with Dak Prescott, with CeeDee Lamb. They try to haggle, and it doesn't happen. He ends up paying exactly what they wanted in the end anyway. So I think McCarthy's betting on himself, and, you know, rightfully so. All he does is win. He also has a very good track record of figuring things out and making the team better coming off the bye. Their win percentage with the Cowboys, Mike McCarthy's win percentage before the bye is right around 60%. His win percentage after the bye goes up to almost 68%. So a pretty noticeable uptick. This is a coach who has very consistently gone into the bye, figured out ways to improve his team, make them a little bit better, and then they come out and just play with their hair on fire. We saw it last year in a similar situation where they went into the bye not feeling great. Now they're coming out of this one feeling even worse than they were last year. So in the spirit of that, Brandon and I both have things that we're hoping to see coming out of the bye now. Of course, they're doing it against a team that has historically had their number with the 49ers. So it's not exactly like the ideal get right game coming out of the bye. But in general, when we think about this Cowboys team, what's one of the things that you're hoping to see more of from this team right now?
Well, I'll start with the first one. And this one is sort of like very obvious, and it might sound really dumb, like a dumb take, but they need to score more points. And I say that in a much larger argument where I was looking online earlier, and I do know that Mike McCarthy has had a success when it comes to scoring, let's say, your 40 burger in the NFL since he kind of joined the Cowboys, and history shows that that rings true. Since 2020, the Cowboys have 16 games in which they've scored at least 40 points in a regular season game. That's first in the NFL. So 16 games. Second place was the Buffalo Bills with 9. So that just shows you there's a large gap between how many times the Cowboys have scored 40 points compared to the rest of the NFL. But having said that, though, Dallas has gone now 11 regular season games without scoring 40 points. That's the second longest streak under Mike McCarthy's tenure with the Cowboys. The longest streak is 12 games, and that was in 2020. So we're approaching that mark where, again, it feels very reminiscent to 2020 in the fact that the Cowboys just have not been able to score points. They've gotten very close, but we know how poor they've been in the red zone. A lot of turnover issues. They're not capitalizing. Brandon Aubrey's just going out there adding points onto the board like it's going out of style. And I just think that for them, it's just they need to be more efficient. Now, where the Cowboys have also gone in the direction of scoring points over the past few years is that under Dan Quinn, they've done a really good job of scoring points on defense, scoring points off of special teams, touchdowns as well, too. But, you know, Trayvon Diggs isn't the same Trayvon Diggs that we've seen over the past few years. He's coming back from a torn ACL. Deron Bland is missing. He was the pick six king of last year. And then you also, when you don't have Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, and a lot of these other guys that you're used to, especially even the rotational guys, like we mentioned, Dorrance Armstrong, Dante Fowler, you're not getting the pressure and you're not getting forced fumbles, maybe a fumble recovery for a touchdown every now and then. And it's just, it seems like the defense is also out of sorts trying to find their way. And I do know that Mike Zimmer at the beginning of the year mentioned that the takeaway number is going to go down, but it's significantly lower than I think a lot of people were expecting. They're at sort of like the bottom third of the NFL right now in total takeaways. And just even turnover differential, it's not what we're used to seeing from the Cowboys team. So I think scoring points is very vague, but I think when you look at the overall picture, like the Cowboys have historically been really good at scoring points under Mike McCarthy in a variety of ways. And a lot of that production has come in the second half of the season post bye. The Cowboys have been fortunate enough where they're kind of like, when you look at the numbers, they're around that week seven, week eight bye for the past few seasons. And so when you look at the amount of times they've scored those 40 burgers and when they've gone over 400 yards, it's usually from week 10 to 18. That's where the majority of their production has come. So maybe they do correct things over the bye. Mike McCarthy has historically been good, like you mentioned. When you look at his production, I believe that he's been, since joining the Cowboys, I believe it's 2-1 on the road. With the Cowboys specifically, I think twice in Minnesota, and I forget what the one was, but you know, it's just, he's also been good on the road, which lines up with where they're at with San Francisco this week. And I think if you're going to score points on San Francisco and take advantage of this matchup, listen, it's the probably the worst defense it's been under Kyle Shanahan, or at least when Mike McCarthy took over in 2020. So it's as good a time as any to score on the 49ers, because they've given up a lot of points as well during their previous few weeks. You know, you look at the Rams as a team that scored, I believe it was 28 points on them. You look at, there was also the Chiefs, of course, scored 28. The Rams were 27. And then you have the Seahawks scored 24. And then the Cardinals beat them 24-23. So they're giving up 20 points consistently. So like, just Dallas get to 27. And I think there's a shot that they win this game.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point about the defense and being able to get turnovers and things like that. One, you mentioned Dante Fowler; he had a pick six this past week. So
exactly, yeah.
There's some of your turnover production right there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think my takeaway with the takeaways was always that nice. A lot of it. Thank you. Started with the pass rush, because you know, Dan Quinn got here and immediately got Micah Parsons. And I think it was as soon as week two is when they were like, oh yeah, he needs to be rushing the passer pretty much all the time. And when you pair that with DeMarcus Lawrence, who had a bit of a resurgence the last couple of years, you pair that with Osa Adigizua, some of the rotational guys they've had, you create a really, really powerful pass rush that then forces the quarterback to speed things up. And then you've got guys like Trayvon Diggs, you've got guys like Deron Bland who can maybe not like be the most sticky in coverage, but they've got the closing speed to take advantage of some of those 50-50 balls when you have to get the ball out quickly because Micah Parsons is bearing down on you. And now this year, I mean, we saw it a little bit in week one. You know, they were getting pressure on Deshaun Watson, and then also he was doing what Deshaun Watson has done in his Browns era, which is throw a lot of really, really bad passes. And they got a couple of takeaways in that game. But then against the Saints and against the Ravens, both of those teams were running the ball so much and so effectively, both of those quarterbacks had fewer than 20 dropbacks in the entire game. Like, you can't get a pass rush if they're not calling pass plays. You can't get interceptions if they're not throwing the ball. And then since then, you know, they had a little bit better showing run defense against the Giants, but then Parsons went out, DeMarcus Lawrence went out, the pass rush just took a huge hit. You already were without Sam Williams, then Marshawn Nealing gets hurt, and Deron Bland, you know, didn't make his return, looked like he would have been able to return for the Lions game, but was a last-second scratch. Very likely he returns for this 49ers game. Possible that Micah Parsons returns for this game as well. He should be back within the next 2 weeks, though. But, I mean, I don't have much of an issue with the defense right now, to be honest. I know they haven't played well, but it's like, I mean, like, they got no arms and no legs. Like, what do you expect, you know?
Yeah.
I've had a really hard time having any real disappointment with them. Obviously, the Saints game was disappointing just because I expected a better performance. But on the whole, we haven't seen any of these star players with Mike Zimmer calling the shots. But to your point, though, the offense is not scoring. And that has been a feature, whether it was Kellen Moore, whether it was Mike McCarthy calling the plays. You know, it's the longest streak without a 40 burger since the 2020 season. And they had the excuse there of, hey, we were playing Garrett Gilbert at quarterback at one point. Yeah,
exactly. Like, Ben DiNucci took snaps for the Dallas Cowboys in 2020. Ben DiNucci's taking snaps.
And I mean, you had a good excuse for not scoring points in that season. This year, there's no excuse. You got Dak Prescott coming off an MVP runner-up season. You got CeeDee Lamb earning a huge contract, and rightfully so. Jake Ferguson had a breakout year last year. Like, Jalen Tolbert has been breaking out so far as well. There's really no reason to not be scoring, and it comes down to the red zone. They just aren't producing there. And I think for me, that kind of brings me to what I'm hoping to see, one of the things I'm hoping to see going forward, which is more effort from these receivers. And Troy Aikman made a point about this and kind of, you know, set off some controversy for his comments, but he was saying, like, the Cowboys run horrible routes. Like, you can tell who the play is called for based on how energetic they are coming off the line when they run their routes. They're not being physical at the catch point. They're not being crisp in their breaks in and out of their routes and everything. And I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, Dak Prescott's been absolutely perfect and he's let down by everybody else, because he has had some really bad throws. He has had some plays where he's held the ball way too long. He's made some bad reads. But at the same time, when your receivers are playing with this kind of effort, and I think Troy is – he's maybe a little harsh.
A little bit. But, well, I mean, like you said, his point is fair.
Yeah, he's not entirely wrong. Yeah. And especially when you've got CeeDee Lamb, and I've been hard on CeeDee Lamb the last couple of weeks on here as well, but I think that comes with the territory of, one, wearing the number 88 in Dallas, and two, making the kind of money he's making. I mean, Dak has had several plays in this season where there's just miscommunication between him and CeeDee. He doesn't have miscommunication with Jalen Tolbert. He doesn't have miscommunication with Jake Ferguson. So it could be a Dak thing, but it's like, he knows where these other guys are supposed to be. He knows where they're running their routes. Him and CeeDee are not on the same page. And I mean, obviously it's a two-person thing they got to fix, but I want to see, just all in all, more effort from these receivers. I feel like Jalen Tolbert, like I said, he's really stepped up, and I've been impressed with what we've seen from him. And it's very clear Dak has a lot of trust in him. But outside of that, I mean, Brandon Cooks, even before his injury, I wasn't really thrilled with what I had seen from him. Kevontae Turpin, I think, has had some flashes here and there. Jake Ferguson hasn't really lived up to the hype of what he showed he was capable of last year. And, you know, Jalen Brooks has had some bad issues here. Ryan Flournoy got his first target, catches the ball, fumbles it. I just need to see more from these receivers, because especially if you're going to have issues with this offensive line where, you know, there is Tyler Guyton still starting? Is TJ Bass playing long term? Cooper Beebe, I think, has been good as a rookie, but he's still a rookie playing center. You need to be able to rely on your receivers, and so far they haven't had that.
Yeah, and especially, you know, it's always like with any kind of conversation football, it's like chicken or the egg. Like, you can make an argument for both sides. Like, are the receivers not getting open and running good routes because the offensive line is allowing a lot of pressure? Is it Dak Prescott not communicating with CeeDee Lamb because they missed an entire offseason's worth of work together? Is it because, like, and I think that, you know, maybe we'll see a trend take fold, but I'm now becoming a big believer where if any team has enough draft capital, like, take a wide receiver every single year, like how a lot of people will take quarterbacks. It's like, well, we need to draft and develop the future, and if you could leverage that for a draft pick down the line, that's great. Well, why not do the same for a wide receiver? You see a lot of these guys producing where they could be drafted in the fifth round and they're 1,000-yard receivers. And it depends, of course, on the situation, but like, Puka Nacua was out there for everybody to take. You know, you look at the guys that they have in Green Bay right now. I don't think anybody was drafted as high as like Christian Watson in the second round. Everybody else was a third round pick, a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, maybe undrafted guys. And so you look at the situation, and I think where it comes down to is, like you mentioned, you want to see a lot more effort, but you also want to see the play caller put his receivers in a better position too. Like, when we were talking about for weeks about Mike McCarthy being towards the bottom in pre-snap motion. Like, then he comes out against the Lions and the Steelers, and he's just pre-snap motion all over the place. And I think that you see that when you do stuff like that, you put your receivers in better position, like Jalen Tolbert was, especially on the touchdown, in Pittsburgh. It's like it took him being in motion, going across the field to score that touchdown. If he wasn't in motion, if he wasn't already getting sort of a head start, he wouldn't have scored in that sense. So I just think that you see a lot of instances across the NFL where the play caller and the quarterback kind of elevate the lack of talent at the wide receiver position. And the Cowboys just don't have the talent that we're used to seeing. Michael Gallup, for all the flaws that he had last year, was still somebody, again, going back to the veteran experience, that was a starter within the system, was familiar with Dak Prescott. He didn't have the best season in the world, but it's somebody who knew the system, was familiar with the quarterback. But when you have guys like Kevontae Turpin, Jalen Brooks, Ryan Flournoy taking more meaningful snaps, that's just, it's tough for Dak to kind of get used to that and only have one offseason worth of work with those guys. But I think Brandon Cooks being out is a lot that the Cowboys fans might not realize. You know, again, he wasn't having the biggest season in the world, but he's still a guy who is a veteran leader on the team, has veteran experience. So you're right. I think it is one of the more glaring needs, and they just need to give a little bit more. Also, too, separation. We've talked about that a lot, too. They're not separating well, and Dak Prescott is throwing a lot of tight window throws, and that could, again, is it Dak or is it the wide receivers? I think there's a lot of ways you can point the finger, but they just have to figure that out. And hopefully this bye week, they kind of scheme things up a little bit more, because if you're going to do it, do it against San Francisco. See if it works, especially, again, this is a team who's had your number for many, many years, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Look at all the games the Cowboys have had against them in recent history, in the playoff game and then last regular season. Dallas hasn't scored a lot of points in those games. So if you're going to do it and you want to break the trend a little bit, just do it this week and just see what works and then move forward. And then you move on to Atlanta after that.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll say, as far as the tight window throw thing, I haven't checked since this last week with the Cowboys not playing. The numbers might have changed. But after week six, Dak was number one in tight window throw percentage for the year. Now, I will say, since McCarthy got here, and obviously he hasn't been calling the plays the whole time, but Prescott usually is near the top in tight window throws. And a lot of that, I think, just comes down to he's got a little bit of a gunslinger in him. And
those seam balls to Jake Ferguson.
Yeah, the seam ball. I was going to say the seam ball to Jake Ferguson. There's some routes that CD gets where he's like, if he has even an inch, I'm fitting it in there.
Yeah.
And to be fair, majority of the time he gets it in there. Like he has a high conversion rate on those tight window throws, but it has
he trusts his guys, like to your point. He and sometimes last year everybody was saying he trusts his guys and wants to boost his guys' confidence to a fault, like where he was force feeding Michael Gallup a little bit too much when he could have gone in other directions. So you're right. It's like you can kind of go either or, but that's sort of who he's been by nature.
Yeah. And I mean you're gonna live with that with him. But it has been a lot higher this year. And I think some of that can be the effort of the receivers in their routes. I think some of that is the play calling. As far as the motion goes, I was one who everybody was like, you know, screaming about the motion. I was like, guys, the Saints and the Ravens, you're playing from behind the entire time.
Yeah.
Like majority of the time teams, even the teams that run motion all the time, like the Dolphins, who are leading with like 77% or something, which like, I think 5 years ago, if you had 50%, you were top five.
Exactly.
So the fact that your teams are like in the 70s is outrageous, like how much it's exploded. But even those teams, when they're playing from behind, they don't run motion much because it takes time and you have to conserve the clock. So, of course, the motion is going to be lower against the Saints and the Ravens when you're playing from behind the entire time. And then you had the Giants game where it's a short week and you know, usually you condense the playbook a little bit. So there wasn't a whole lot of motion there. But then, like you were saying, the Steelers and the Lions, they're doing what they were doing most of last year, motion all over the place. And I was like, yeah, they're running their offense the normal way. Like that's a part of their offense, just not when they're getting, you know, curb stomped in the first quarter.
Exactly.
And so I'm not going to say Dak's been perfect. I'm not going to say Mike McCarthy's been perfect in his play calling. But I think, I mean, we know last year Dak Prescott is capable of balling out in this offense. Mike McCarthy is capable of calling great plays for Dak. The biggest change really has been, one, the offensive line and instability there, but also the receivers. I mean, CeeDee Lamb has not played up to his standards, and you've got a bunch of new guys that are having larger roles in this offense. So I think you got to see more effort from these receivers and more cohesion from these receivers with their quarterback. And another thing that I'll say that I hope to see more of is, specifically as it relates to this offense, is more Rico Dowdle. And running back has been a topic of conversation for a while now. And this past week with the Ravens beating the Buccaneers and Derrick Henry having another great game, everyone is like, man, if only the Cowboys had called him. And I get it. Like, Derrick Henry, great player. And I think there were a whole lot of other reasons that they didn't go after him besides what Jerry Jones is saying. But I tweeted this out, and I think it's fascinating. Derrick Henry's success rate on all of his runs this year, 46.3%. That's seventh among running backs. Rico Dowdle has a success rate of 45.8%, which is ninth. So he's only two spots behind Derrick Henry in terms of success rate for his runs. Now, to be fair, Derrick Henry's running the ball a whole lot more than Rico Dowdle, so the sample size is much larger. But in terms of their efficiency on a per-run basis, not a whole lot of daylight there between the two. And I'm not going to sit here and say Rico Dowdle is the next Derrick Henry. Of course not. Like, Derrick Henry's the better running back, absolutely. But Rico has been productive. He also has not had a lot of snaps because, again, they're playing from behind majority of the time. And then this past week, for out of nowhere, coming off of Rico's best game of his career, suddenly Zeke gets more snaps than him for the first time since week one. Coincidentally, they also have their least efficient rushing game since week one. And, you know, I could go into a whole lot of reasons of why I think they gave Zeke more snaps this week, you know, in the week where he publicly said he didn't like his role and all of that and all the different politics that go into how those players get used. But it's very, very clear after that game, Rico Dowdle is your best running back. He had three fewer carries than Zeke in this game and a fraction of the snaps, and he still led the team in rushing. Give Rico Dowdle the ball when you want to run it. He's more efficient as a runner. He's more efficient as a pass catcher. I'm not saying I don't want to see Zeke touch the field ever again, but Rico Dowdle, you can have a reasonably effective rushing attack with Rico Dowdle as your main guy, especially if the receivers, again, start pulling their weight and this pass game really gets going. It's going to open up even more for Rico Dowdle. But that's one thing I want to see is stop playing with the running back situation. We know who the best guy on this in this room is right now. It's not the guy you drafted fourth overall back in 2016.
Yeah, I agree. I think Rico is proven that he is the guy. I mean, listen, I don't think Pittsburgh, his performance against them was sort of a Fugazi performance. We know Pittsburgh isn't, you know, the Pittsburgh of the 2008 era or 2009 era where they had James Harrison and all these other guys. But there's still a really good defense under Mike Tomlin. I mean, TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, a lot of these guys, I mean, they are always a very sound defense when it comes to stopping the run. And the fact that he was able to have that performance against them was really good. He was grinding out a lot of yards. But then also, like what we've been talking about, Dallas had the lead for a lot of that game. And they were going back and forth. And it felt like a much more competitive game. And they were able to run the ball. They were able to have a lot more balance on offense. They just haven't been in games so far this year where it's been that case. And, you know, a lot of people were getting stressed over Mike McCarthy saying, well, we don't really know what we're going to do right now with Dalvin Cook because, you know, we haven't been in a position to evaluate the running back position because of where we've been in these game situations. And a lot of people were upset with that, but it makes total sense. How can you evaluate a team where at halftime they're down 23-16, 23-6, or whatever the score is, and they're down by two scores? It's like, you're going to have to come out of the half throwing. If not, you know, you're gonna have to still try and defend them, because if they're getting the ball in the second half, you don't want to be down even more. So you can't really establish the run when you're playing that type of football. And against the Lions, it was the same thing. And I've been wondering more and more, and this is what I wanted to bring up to you in pre-show, and I kind of saved it a little bit. It's not like a hot take or anything, but I wonder if now the Cowboys are sort of handcuffing themselves, like, because the legacy of Ezekiel Elliott is handcuffing them from making some sort of move. Like, if you took the name plate off of, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's, you know, back, and it was some other guy, Alfred Morris, if you will, and he was producing like this, I feel like the Cowboys would have cut him or demoted him or done something. I mean, we saw that kind of last year with Deuce Vaughn, where it was sort of this soft benching. Maybe he injured his ankle and they shut him down for the year. I just think that for the Cowboys, they're stuck in a position where it's like, oh, well, Deuce Vaughn is this sort of guy we're trying to get going, and he's a great player for us. Well, he's been inactive for the past 2 weeks. Hunter Lipke he's a great player to have, but he shouldn't be like the next up and coming Peyton Hillis. You know, I mean, it would be great if that was the case, but like, I feel like the Cowboys have somebody in Dalvin Cook that they've had for many weeks now. It's not an adjustment period anymore. And what's the reason why they haven't activated him? I mean, they have the three elevations. They could just elevate him, but also too, you don't have, usually running backs by nature are good special teams players, or they're getting snaps on special teams. That was sort of what you saw with Malik Davis, all those, you know, few years back. But Zeke isn't playing special teams. Dalvin Cook probably isn't playing special teams. Rico isn't really playing special teams because he's supposed to be the starter. So you don't want to get him in, you know, special team snaps and keep him in harm's way. And Deuce Vaughn is inactive. So it's like, who's going to be playing that role? And it's usually your third running back, but that's not the case with Dallas right now. So I just feel like that sort of Zeke's legacy is sort of handcuffing them from elevating Dalvin Cook because of how similar they are. And I'd love to see this week where it is Dalvin Cook and Rico Dowdle, and maybe Zeke takes a back seat a little bit. Maybe you can get a three-man rotation in there. But I just feel like you have to at some point rip the Band-Aid off and say, listen, Zeke, if you're not giving us the sort of production in the run game, we're going to elevate Dalvin just to see what he has. Promotes healthy competition for a team who needs that probably right now. They need a little bit more uncomfortability and to create a sense of urgency. I mean, we saw CeeDee Lamb a few years ago take off when OBJ was flirted around as being like a potential Cowboys signing because he wasn't producing, and he went off at the end of the 2021 season. So I just think, like, let's see what healthy competition breathes and promotes. And if it means that Zeke needs to take a step back, well, then that's just the nature of where the Cowboys are right now. Like we talked about it at the top, they don't have any time to be playing around with emotions. They don't have that luxury right now. They're not undefeated. Like they need to keep stacking wins against tough opponents. And if that means that Zeke needs to take a step back a little bit, then so be it. But I do think that Rico's your guy. And let's see what plays out with the RB2 position, because I do think Dalvin Cook to this point deserves at least a shot for one game or two just to prove what he has.
I think you make a lot of good points there. I do have to rain on your parade and say, I really don't care to see Dalvin Cook at this point.
Very true. Very true.
I mean, he's not been a productive running back in quite some time. And I mean, some people have said, oh, well, you know, he was injured. Like now he's healthy. Like he hasn't really had a whole lot of tread on the tires lately, but also like for a reason. I mean, this was a household name not too long ago. If he had something to contribute, he wouldn't be on the practice squad. You know, either the Cowboys would have used him by now or some other team would have snatched him up, or he never would have even made it to Dallas. And, you know, whenever I see people say like, oh, you know, another bad running performance, like got to get Dalvin Cook, I'm like, we're trying to fix 2024 problems with 2018 players. Like,
yeah.
It's a non-starter for me, but who knows? Dalvin Cook could come out and just, you know, recapture the magic he had back in the day. I could end up looking really, really wrong. Like I did with my Sam Laporta take.
No, you were right on that one. By a long shot.
I was absolutely right. The haters will say it's fake, but
we know it's real. We did it together. We were both on the same page with that one. I understand your point about, you know, Dalvin Cook is just like, what is the name of Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott in a backfield going to do for you? Like, it doesn't translate to points or yards. But I just think at this point, it's like maybe a changeup is good, you know, maybe just throwing somebody new into the mix who has fresh legs for a week. Like, even if he just gets you two extra wins, you know, maybe he's not the answer for the long term, but if he can just provide sort of like an extra jolt of energy to the offense, I think would be great. I think he's pretty good as a pass catcher, but we do know that he has more skill as just a downhill runner. But let's just see what he has, because at this point it's like it wouldn't hurt it wouldn't help if you're taking away snaps from Rico Dowdle, but I think there's snaps to be taken away from all the other guys. Like Hunter Lipke, again, I love him. I think he's a great player, but if you can give Dalvin Cook his snaps and then, you know, combine that with whatever Zeke is getting right now, I think we can kind of come to an understanding where that's okay for right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not – if he gets called up for this game or any other game, I'm not going to be like, oh, like fire McCarthy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, this is the worst thing ever. But I just – it doesn't do anything for me because, you know, like I said, if he had something to contribute, he'd be somewhere else. He'd already be playing by now. Rico Dowdle has shown more than enough at this point. Even if they bring up Dalvin Cook and give him, you know, Zeke snaps or Lipke snaps, Rico's still got to be your number one guy. Like, he is the most effective guy that they've had so far this year. I think he's the one you got to be, have like him be the top guy, taking the snaps, taking the carries, and then figure out the rotation behind him.
And really quick to your point, I mean, we saw even last year, like, you know, people might forget, I know I don't, where it's like, this is Rico's first full year as like the starter for the Cowboys. He's always been a backup guy, change of pace. And, you know, it's like when you're the starter as a running back in the NFL, like you have to get a feel for your offensive line, how they block, what you're used to. And I mean, not only is he becoming the number one guy for the first time, but he's running in front of two guys that are taking on new positions. And oh, by the way, they're rookies in Tyler Guyton and Cooper Beebe. So it's like he not only has to get used to being the number one guy, he has to get used to those guys. And I mean, we were, I forget if it was McCarthy or whoever it was, or Schottenheimer. It's like he's seeing the lanes better. He's running with more patience as time goes on. And that's what happens. Tony Pollard was the same way last year. Tony Pollard wasn't the same guy that we saw at the beginning of the year as he was after the bye week and towards the end of the year. He started to look a lot more comfortable around that Carolina Panthers game. And that's because that was his first year as the number one guy in the offense. So I just think that when, again, you just need a lot of reps. And when you take those reps away from somebody who needs them, it's going to keep snowballing and you kind of have to play catch up. And to your point, that's why I think Rico deserves more shots, if not to just get his sea legs under him a little bit more and get used to running behind these guys. Because if he is the guy for the Cowboys, like, he needs those meaningful snaps, especially as he gets closer towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm glad you agree with me and think that I
yes, was right. I do.
But we've talked now pretty much almost exclusively about the offense. Do you have something you're hoping to see on the defensive side?
Yeah, I just want to see more pressure. Again, similar like to my amazing take of where score more points. I just want to see the Cowboys just, you know, we heard all offseason about Mike Zimmer being this sort of guru of simulated pressure. And what we talked about earlier, they haven't been in a position to utilize that defensive scheme outside of maybe your week one against the Giants, but they were down a few guys, and then maybe against the Steelers. It's just, they need to have more creativity on defense. And we've seen flashes of that, but, you know, Marcus Mosier posted this picture of, I think it was against the Lions, where the defensive line looked like from left to right, KJ Henry, Carlos Watkins, Linval Joseph, and Carl Lawson. Like, those guys were not on the team, let alone the 53-man roster, by August 14th. Like, they just got to the team around the end of training camp. And again, when you're trying to build this sort of continuity, the defensive line is just much about feel and playing next to one another as it is on the offensive side of the ball. And when you're trying to do a bunch of twist stunts and everything, like, you need to get used to the guys that you're playing next to. But they just haven't had that same continuity as they've had in years past, where it was, you know, your Osa Digizuas working with your Dorrance Armstrong, DeMarcus Lawrence, Dante Fowler, a lot of these same rotational guys. It's just been a revolving door of defensive linemen for the Cowboys. And to their credit, they're trying their best. I mean, they're signing a bunch of guys who were popular. Like, again, the 2018 team for the Cowboys would be phenomenal on offense and defense with just the guys that they have. But it's just, that's not the reality of where we're at in 2024. And so it's like, I just need to see a little bit more creativity. You look at the matchup that they have against the 49ers this week, and it's pretty favorable when you look at the past 3 weeks for the 49ers. They have not been really the same team, and Brock Purdy hasn't really been the same player. When you look at under pressure, according to PFF, he has a 50% completion percentage. He's been pressured at around 40, 3 dropbacks total out of 109, and that ranks second only to Geno Smith. And just his offensive grade in general, you're looking at around about a 56.5, so it's really below average. So when he's under pressure over the past few weeks, he's not been the same quarterback. Against the Kansas City Chiefs, he threw 3 interceptions, which was the highest of the season. And it's, I believe, the most over the past 3 games when it comes to under pressure. So I feel like that if they can try and create some chaos in the pocket, that would be great this week, especially when they're down. They're not only top wide receiver in Brandon Ayuk, who unfortunately tore his ACL against the Chiefs. We don't know the status of Deebo Samuel, who was dealing with some pneumonia. He's discharged from the hospital as of today and recording on Tuesday. So we'll see what his status is for the weekend. Ricky Pearsall, and I saw this, and I'm not joking in this, but like, he's their healthiest wide receiver, and he was recovering from a gunshot wound that happened 2 months ago. I mean, it's like, that's where they're at now, and nobody feels sorry for you in the NFL when you're dealing with these types of injuries. But their leading receiver is Juwan Jennings with 400 yards and believe 3 touchdowns. And he's a good wide receiver as like a number 3, like a Cedric Wilson or a Michael Gallup, but he's not supposed to be the guy who's leading the stat sheet when you're comparing this game. So if Brock Purdy doesn't have his weapons, George Kittle is also maybe TBD, depending on how his foot sprain goes. It's like, you can create chaos, and let's just see what he has. He's always been schemed up well. The Cowboys have always put pressure on him, but that was under Dan Quinn. It's like, if you can get a little bit more creative under Mike Zimmer, I just want to see a little bit more. And the Cowboys, I mean, they've been towards the middle of the road when it comes to quarterback hits. They're around, I believe, about 19th, according to Pro Football Reference, at about 37 for 2024. So it's like, they've gotten to the quarterback, but that's not recent. Like, I need to see a little bit more production from your Carl Lawsons, your Chauncey Golstons, if they're going to be the guys. Like, if this is all you have, let's kind of put them in better position to succeed with just defensive scheme. And then let's just see what happens. And I think it starts this week. When you look at Brock Purdy and where he's at, it just seems to be a favorable matchup. And let's just see what they can do, especially coming off of the bye where they have a little bit more time to prepare for this.
Yeah. And I think after week 6, I don't know how it's changed with them not having played this week, but other teams have. But the Cowboys were just outside of the top 10 in pressure rate.
Yeah.
But much, much lower in terms of sacks. So yeah, they're getting pressure, which honestly, you know, being outside, being anywhere in the top half of the league with how devastated they are with injuries right now on the defensive line, kudos to Mike Zimmer. Like, I'll give him flowers for that. But again, you know, pressures are very good, but if it doesn't really turn into sacks, and we know it hasn't turned into takeaways, you know, you need to have the impact become more real. Pressures are a very good, you know, predictive indicator, because they are more consistent than sacks, more consistent than takeaways. But right now, those pressures aren't really turning into anything for them. So, again, getting Micah Parsons back will help a lot. Even getting more continuity with the guys that are playing. Like you said, 4 of them weren't even on the roster halfway through the preseason, which is just, again, like, that's why I have nothing negative to say about Mike Zimmer right now, because what's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
It's the defensive equivalent of the 49ers receiver room right now. And pivoting to the Cowboys and the 49ers game this week, Sunday Night Football, I feel like before the season, I was thinking, looking at this game and saying, man, this is going to be one of those where I'm going to be dreading it all day, because of the significance of this matchup and the significance of, on one hand, what a win would mean for the Cowboys, but also what another loss to this 49ers team would mean. And now going into it, it's like, neither of these teams are that good right now. And yeah, they're both banged up. Brock Purdy is not playing the way that he has, which, as someone who has been kind of a cheerleader of the notion that Brock Purdy was largely held up by the scheme and by having a bunch of all pros to throw to, it's a little kind of satisfying to see him not perform well when all those all pros go out. Obviously you don't like to see those injuries in, you know, as someone who, if you don't know by now, went to Arizona State, and Brandon Ayuk went to Arizona State, definitely wishing the best for him. And that was, you know, hoping for a quick, speedy, full recovery for him. But both of these teams come into this one. You mentioned neither defense has really played up to their standards. Offense has been they've both been kind of hit or miss. Earlier, you mentioned how the Cowboys actually have a shot at winning this, which kind of, it seems like, you know, we're getting our hopes up for another disappointment. But do you think they actually win this game? And if so, how do they do it? Is it really just taking advantage of all the injuries?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, if the Cowboys were ever going to beat the San Francisco 49ers, like, just, you know, win, loss, whatever, if they were ever going to beat them, this is the time to do it. I mean, they're without, when you look at the skill position players last year in the matchup compared to this year, you had Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel. This year, you might have Jordan Mason, Eric Saubert, who was famously on the Cowboys for one game last year. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter. I completely forgot about his tenure with the Cowboys. Apologize to the Saubert family. And then you have Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall as the wide receivers. Like, that's where they're at right now, where they're a completely different team. Even though Jordan Mason actually led the team in rushing yards last year against the Cowboys, he actually had a lot of success. I forgot. I was like, oh, yeah, that one backup for the 49ers last year ran pretty well, and Christian McCaffrey didn't have to do anything. And then I looked at it was Jordan Mason. I was like, oh, yeah, he's the number one guy for them. I believe the second or third leading rusher in the NFL. That's great. But I just think for them to win, they have to stop the run. Force Brock Purdy to beat you with these second, third, fourth string wide receivers. Like, if they were going to ever sell out in a game and just say, listen, we're putting eight men in a box, we're going to stop the 49ers from running the football. And Trayvon Diggs, we know you're banged up a little bit, but, like, go defend Juwan Jennings or Ricky Pearsall. And then if Deron Bland is back, sorry, guy. I mean, you're just going to be put out on an island this week. You're going to have some help on the back end, but we just need the matchups to be one-on-one with you guys so that we can stop the run. I think if they're going to win, that's the way to do it. And I mentioned the defense has been banged up. They've missed a lot of guys. To Hufanga's on IR. I know they lost their defensive tackle for the season, Hargrave. So he's gone. So it's like a lot of the usual suspects for them are out of the picture. And Fred Warner is having sort of a defensive player of the year campaign. But if you can kind of neutralize him a little bit and kind of just get him out of the mix, I think that they can be pretty good. And if Charvarius Ward can, you know, match up with CeeDee Lamb, maybe that's like a coin flip for them. So I just think that they just need to be better on defense with stopping the run, be better on offense, and take advantage of the times when you're in the red zone. Don't just score field goals. Like, you have to score touchdowns. And I just think overall for Dallas, like, they need to win this game. Both teams really need to. But where you look at sort of how the 49ers have beaten the Cowboys, and they've had their number over the past few seasons since the playoff loss in 2021, I just think, like, regardless of what the box score looks like, I don't care if Dak throws two interceptions and they still win the game. Like, just leave San Francisco with the win. I think just confidence boost wise, that goes a long way for a lot of the veterans in the locker room who have been here since 2021, for Mike McCarthy specifically. Like, it doesn't have to look pretty, but just get back to winning and not leave with like another blowout loss, like is sort of historic for them against the 49ers. That's all I'm asking. I think it's possible. Do I think it's likely? Ask me at the end of the week when I see what the injury report looks like for both teams, and then I might have a better answer for you. But I will say right now, as it stands, it's as likely as it's ever been for the Cowboys to beat the 49ers, at least as it stands on Monday night or Tuesday night heading into Wednesday.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like good luck, like juju, I think that's pointing towards a Cowboys win here. Obviously
the universe is trying to toss him a bone. They're like, come on, guys,
really, really hard.
Get it together. Yeah.
All these injuries right before the Cowboys game, the fact that the Cowboys are, they can only win on the road this year for whatever reason, like they can't win at home, which historically they've been, you know, almost unbeatable at home under Mike McCarthy. Can't do it this year, but they can beat anybody on the road, apparently. One of the very few teams to beat the Steelers this year, and it came in Pittsburgh, go figure. And also there's also the fact that, like, just this is me personally, I won't be watching this game because Sunday happens to be my wife's birthday. So I am, you know, doing the honorable thing and saying, you know, I said, honey, this Sunday, it's a football free day. It's all about you. It had nothing to do with, you know, the thought of, well, maybe if I don't watch, then they'll win.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, right. It could go the other way, where if it's a blowout, you didn't, like, suffer for 60 minutes.
there's only potential upside.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, and I'll say this too, like, you know, when you look at how the Cowboys have been this year, like if you told me that, you know, going into the season, let's just say hypotheticals here, only working in hypotheticals, that the Cowboys go on the road, beat San Francisco by the score of, I don't know, 27-10, let's just say. Like, talk about one of the weirdest seasons in Cowboys history, where they lose at home to Derek Carr and the New Orleans Saints by a blowout loss, and then they go on the road and beat San Francisco by a lot, who's a team that's had their number for the under Mike McCarthy's tenure outside of 2020. Like, that to me would be a crazy, crazy scenario, and just the definition of the season. Like, the Cowboys winning, like, it would just be the icing on the cake for what the season has been, where it's just been just a bunch of just gray. Like, it's not black and white for the Cowboys this year. It's just gray. It's mucky. Yeah. It's dirty. Nothing's clean about this year. It's just, we're in the Fairly Odd Parents episode where Timmy's just walking around with a bunch of like gray blobs. Like, that's what it is right now. That's what the season is. And the icing on the cake moment for that would be the Cowboys walking away with a win. It would be less surprising if they lose. I'll say that.
Yeah. And the great thing too is, and I'm saying this part tongue in cheek of it being great, but if they do win, nobody's going to care.
I completely agree with you.
You beat the 49ers. You get the Kyle Shanahan monkey off your back. But guess what? You did it against Brock Purdy and a bunch of backups.
That's why I think for the locker room morale, like, just winning this game would go a long way, regardless of who's on the other side. Like, just being able to leave and not have the stink of a graphic coming up, you know, from Fox or wherever. It's like, Cowboys history against the 49ers since 2021. L. You know, it doesn't look good.
Yeah. So to that point, I think there's a lot of things in terms of karma that leads me to believe they'll win this one. As far as predictions, I am going to predict the Cowboys lose, just because at this point, I'm so hurt. I'm so damaged. I can't actually imagine a world where they beat the 49ers, even with all these things that are seemingly trending in their direction. But either way, even though I won't be watching it live, I will, you know, I'm recording the game. I've got, you know, access to the All 22 through NFL Pro, which has, you know, been an incredible addition this year, by the way, if you're not on the train yet. So I'll know what we're talking about next week on the podcast, when we're breaking down everything and hopefully breaking down a win that I didn't get the chance to see. But really, that's it for now. Before we head into that game, Brandon, thank you again for coming on. Like I said at the beginning of the show, you're the OG. You're the originator of the writer's block. It was very, very great to have you here. And I hope that you are right in all your good vibes for the Cowboys right now.
I'll say this, you know, the definition of history is a mystery. Something's going to give in this game where the 49ers have had the Cowboys number for the previous few years, but the Cowboys are undefeated on the road. So, you know, let go with that wherever you may, wherever life takes you this weekend on Sunday. But no, always happy to be back on the writer's block. Brings up a lot of old nostalgic feelings. I wish the other two guys were here, but that'll mean we'll have to come back on another episode and be back for everybody for the original Four Horsemen.
Absolutely. We will get the Four Horsemen back together before too long. And to sign off for this one, Brandon, can we get your best, your most energetic, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys?